someone has already done and is already doing what you want to do. And no, they didn't fall into a rich family to do so. They were not born lucky. You know you can be more. You can have more, do more, and be more. You know this. You wouldn't be listening otherwise.
Hey, you guys, thanks for tuning in to another episode of Millennial Market Talk. And I am your host, Mark Jones. And this is the show where we aim to empower and inspire, not entitle. And today I am joined by our guest, John Vail. John, how are you?
Good, Mark. Thank you for having me on the show, man.
Absolutely, man. It is good to see you. Good to have you on the show.
Always good to see you.
But before we get into what you actually do, why you're on the show, what you're going to be sharing with us, I've been opening up the shows with a little bit of millennial trivia.
Gotcha,
okay.
Gotcha.
And a lot of the guests are on the cusp of millennial. So we're trying to determine how millennial you are based on my standards. and in this case, this is Lindsay's standards. Shout out to Lindsay. Thank you for doing this. So we've got a couple of trivia questions and I want to see how you do.
Let's do it.
You ready?
Let's go.
Okay. First one, the phrase "By Felicia" was first said in which 1995 movie?
I have no clue.
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah, I hear it all the time, but I have no clue.
I actually got this right.
You got that one right?
Yes. Friday.
Friday. Wow. Damn.
Right? Wait a minute. That's right. Okay. Here we go. Number two. Every millennial has a favorite Chuck Norris joke. What TV show did Chuck Norris get famous from?
It was, oh, man. Oh, crap.
Chuck Norris. Walker, Texas Ranger.
Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah. That's all right. Jeez, 0 for 2. Let's see here. Okay. So for bonus points, give us a there we go. Right now, well, not everybody remembers the Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
But we all know Chuck Norris. So tell me a Chuck Norris joke.
Chuck Norris, a joke. Golly, Jesus, man, there's just so many of them.
There are a ton.
There are a ton. I can't think of one specific. I'm not one to tell
jokes,
corny jokes. No.
They're all dad jokes too, most of them.
I'm gonna miss that bonus.
That's all right. The one that I gave to Lindsay when she was asking of me was, and I couldn't think of one offhand, so it was the lamest one. Chuck Norris, when he does push-ups, he doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the world away.
I remember that.
That's so lame. All right, let's move on. Where does SpongeBob live? Gosh.
SpongeBob, under the ocean?
It's true, but where?
Isn't it like a little bubble home or something?
Pineapple under the sea.
Yeah. SpongeBob.
It's okay. Let's keep rolling. The first iPods went on sale November 2001. How much did they cost?
$60.
No, way off.
Way off.
Yeah.
$129.
$399. Right? Jeez. Talk about first. Here you go to the market. Boom. Oh, nobody knew what they were. Did you have an iPod?
I don't really.
Or did you have the little iPod mini or?
You mean the iPad, right?
No, iPod. Like the first iPod.
Jeez.
Okay, here we
go. The laptop.
Okay. Yeah. Well, this one. Wait a minute. It was one that we talked about on the last show. What was Napster and LimeWire originally used for?
Music, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But doing what with music?
That was Sean Parker was the creator of
Napster. That's right. Yeah.
I just forget what.
Pirating music.
Pirating music.
That's right. Are you ready for the next one? Here we go. All right. So finish the following phrases. Some of these are easy. Some of them are not.
It's been hard so far.
So the first one, finish this sentence. All that and a bag of
chips.
Got it. Talk to the
hand.
Let's see if you get this one. Rocky loves
you.
Aw. It's Emily. Do you remember the show, the movie, Three Ninjas?
Yeah, vaguely though.
Okay. No. It's like the now version of Scotty Doesn't Know.
Yeah.
If anybody remembers what movie that's from, holler at me.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Okay, so last one. She was looking, dang, I shouldn't sing it, huh? She was looking kind of dumb with a finger in her thumb.
No.
She was looking kind of dumb with her finger in her thumb.
Oh, man.
In the shape of an L on the forehead.
Hey, man.
I got that one wrong, actually. Yeah, I did.
You got the rest pretty much right.
For the most part, I did. Nice. I did. What are we? We're 2 years apart?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all right.
Jesus.
Some people live under the rocks. God, some people work a lot. And you are one of them.
5, 10 years ago, I could have answered all those correct.
I believe you.
But
so let's get into a little bit of the discussions. So, John, you are currently the owner of Alamo Biscuit and Company. Yes. But before that, and what I know you for many years, and I've known you for quite some time now, is all of the many businesses that you've opened. In my opinion, you are the definition of an entrepreneur. And we want to share your trials, your tribulations, where you started, all that good stuff with our listeners. So yeah. Starting off, let them know, where'd you come from? Where did John Vail come from?
South Texas, okay. A little town called Edinburgh.
Okay. Yeah.
The Valley, we call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so graduated from high school in 2001 and came straight to San Antonio.
Okay.
UTSA.
And what led you to San Antonio?
UTSA.
Okay, good deal.
Yeah.
Going to school there. And didn't it just open recently prior to that, something like that?
UTSA?
UTSA. Oh,
they've been around for, I think, the late 70s, 80s.
No way.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Wow, okay. Yeah. So it just started getting bigger.
Bigger.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So let's see. From that point, tell us about your upbringing. I mean, how'd you grow up?
So I grew up, actually, I was raised on a ranch.
Okay.
I grew up in that livestock kind of tradition, you know, raise cattle.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's, I mean, you'll never guess.
No, not at all.
So yeah, I used to show cows and, you know, feed the cows and, you know, we had all, you know, like I said, we had a ranch, lived on the ranch and did a lot of, labor.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Wasn't used to that where you come home and play video games and stuff. My father kind of had me, myself and my brother, you know, always working, doing something.
Sure.
Yeah. It's nonstop, really. Even during the summer times, he owned a couple businesses, pharmacies.
Okay.
And he had us working in the pharmacies. Yeah. So we were either working on the ranch, working in the pharmacies, you know, not saying that I didn't have a social life by any means also, but at the same time, definitely did a lot of, like, we grew up working.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. No, I mean, and a lot of folks would think that, and I'm guessing your father owned a pharmacy. So therefore you came up, with means. And a lot of folks would think that those that come up with means are just cush. The cush lifestyle, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's not the case.
Definitely not the case. We had to work for everything.
Absolutely. And a few of the other guests that I've had on here have spoken about how their parents instilled different things in them through way of teaching them earlier on. Mm-hmm. And those are things that we don't learn in school. Those are things that we don't hear. Absolutely.
Can't teach that.
So tell us some of the things that I guess you went through when you were younger before you got to college that helped you, that you kind of carried forward.
I would say, first off, we wake up extra early.
Mm-hmm.
Before school. We were waking up at 6 in the morning, 5:30 in the morning. And we'll go feed the cows and do all that stuff and then come back. Then start getting ready for school. Kind of like, you know, the regular working person wakes up extremely early, right? And sometimes they go to the gym or whatnot, and then they go to work. But I got used to waking up early, doing and doing some labor, sure, and then going to school. So it gave me a feel of a little bit of a working life, and a little, or I don't know what you want to call that, but just a little feel of the working life.
Sure, right? Sure. I mean, it gave you structure in your upbringing.
Like, I had to go to bed early because I knew I was going to get up early.
That makes sense.
I wasn't just getting up early just to go to work at school. I was getting up early to actually
to work.
To work.
Yeah, literally work. So guaranteed that I have to assume that carried forward into everything else that you've done moving forward. But let's get into college. I mean, you went to college. That's basically where I met you.
Yeah.
And what was that like for you?
So as soon as I graduated from high school, I was like, you know, want something, a little change. I think everybody likes a little change, right?
Absolutely. So,
I was like, you know, I was looking at a couple of universities, and obviously it was like, well, San Antonio would be a great city, you know, that's why not? So chose UTSA. I kind of wanted to check out a big city because remember, I was a small city, not only that, but I was living on a ranch in a small city.
Ah.
So I wanted some big change.
So now it's actually making a lot more sense how you turned out. He was like, get me off this ranch and I'm on a party.
Oh, but don't get me wrong. I still, like, when I go down to the valley, man, I still go hunting. I still, you know, I still do what I got to do on the ranch. You know what I mean? I like it.
Absolutely. And most that would meet you would never know that.
No, never know. Yeah. No, a lot of people don't even know that.
Honestly. Yeah, I agree.
I don't, you know, it's nothing that we really talk about, right?
Sometimes. You never know. So in college, I believe you had, or maybe the treasurer of your fraternity or something along those lines that put you in a position to kind of see what business looked like firsthand. I know your father owned businesses, but I don't know how in depth he was like, hey, this is how you run a business. More so, hey, get behind that counter.
Yeah, it was more like, get behind the counter. Dad, I'm not even 16. What are you
right?
doing? I don't care.
They didn't have labor laws back then.
Labor laws back then, right? I was a cashier.
Right?
I was a cashier at my father's pharmacy, you know? But at least, you know, it's a little work experience, even though I was like literally 10, 11, 12 doing that stuff.
It's wow.
crazy.
Yeah.
Customers would look at me like, we're going to.
Oh, he's cute. Do they know about the labor laws?
Just kidding. I don't got to pay for this, right?
That's awesome.
You're not going to charge me, right?
Yeah.
No, but anyways, yeah. So I went to UTSA and I went there originally for pharmacy school.
Okay.
Because
you wanted to follow your father's footsteps.
I want to follow the footsteps. It's like any other, I guess, not a lot of children would want to do, right?
Yeah.
So went there for pharmacy school. So in reality, I'm a biology major.
Okay.
My actual degree I got from UTSA is a biology degree.
Okay.
That's what I got. Never got a business degree. I have a bio degree. So at UTSA, I joined Lambda Chi Alpha.
Okay.
And I became the social chair there. And I was in charge of fundraising and for the fraternity and this and that. And it was kind of there. I kind of got a feel of a little bit of the business side.
Okay.
A little bit just because, you know, we'll meet as officers and we had to, all right, guys, we need to raise some funds for this event or for that event.
Right.
And, you know, all that fell on me.
And even though, and I want to point this out, you were not the treasurer. You were not in a business path as far as degree went. You knew a little bit about money and things of that nature
basics.
Just from seeing your basics.
Yeah, basics.
But you were in a position of social chair, which that is really where the money comes from, is the revenue, so to speak, for a fraternity.
Yeah.
Other than fundraisers, so to speak. But you're the fundraiser. How do you do that? Let's throw a party. We'll charge them. We won't charge them. Done.
So exactly. I did really well doing fundraising events. Social events, and that kind of led into the first company I founded with a couple of the partners.
Okay.
And that was called Paper Napkin Productions.
Okay. And I remember. Absolutely.
Yeah, I think everyone at UTSA remembers
absolutely.
That company, because, you know, we wouldn't only just do, you know, Jettle Fest events.
Right. No, they were huge.
Or Nickapalooza.
Absolutely.
Or we would also bring big, I wouldn't say big names, but I guess large names. Well, I mean.
Big enough names.
You know, we'll bring down Vanilla Ice.
I was going to say Vanilla Ice is a big enough name.
Yeah, man. We brought down Vanilla Ice. We brought down DJ Darude.
Yep.
Billy Joe Shaver, the Ying Yang Twins.
Ying Yang Twins? Yeah, oh, so man, that's right.
So we did a bunch of concerts like that. So that was my first experience with actual, you know, LLC
sure,
company.
Sure.
Being 21 years old.
Right? And really had no understanding of it, but you knew I had a concept, I've got a product or a service, there's a margin in it,
Exactly.
I've got my expenses. They tell me to open a business account, this is what I've got to do.
Exactly. So it was pretty cool because we had to. Obviously, the entertainers called X amount of money,
mm-hmm.
so we knew we had to sell X amount of tickets.
Yep.
And so it was a, you know.
And to me, you kind of, I mean, that sounds almost like it. You eased into business because you were able to determine your fixed costs pretty quickly.
Pretty quickly.
We rented exactly. this space.
Yeah.
Let me hear, I mean, you tell me.
Oh, pretty much. I mean, you said it pretty straightforward there. We would. I would go to the owner of the club,
right,
or whatever the venue was, mm-hmm. and hey, luckily they already had a good reputation,
sure,
that we you know we had built, and I had built with certain club owners at the time from my
these personal. Days we'd call it a following.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So, yeah, exactly. So it wasn't that hard to go to any club in town and be like, hey, we're gonna throw a party,
mm-hmm.
what can we do to rent it out? No, it was kind of like, yes, we want you.
Yeah, absolutely.
No question about it. So that was we're fortunate for that. So it was a little easier for us, but we have, then again, we built that following,
like, sure, said, absolutely.
So at that point we took advantage of that and parlayed it with bringing in big names and mm-hmm. selling tickets online. So that went really good. It was an experience. It was a fun experience, but it was something that we did it for a few years. And then I was, you know, me thinking bigger, always thinking bigger.
Sure.
Always thinking bigger. I was like, you know what? I think it's time for me to, you know, own my own club or
level up. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Level up. So from there, I opened up a bar when I was a senior at UTSA.
Okay.
I was 23 years old and opened up my first like brick and mortar business.
That's awesome. And more so, what made you decide to do that? Was it the, I want to work for myself. I believe I can do this on my own. I mean, what was the reason for that? I want more?
I think it was, I want more.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was, I want more.
That makes sense.
Sometimes I'm a little too ambitious.
I don't know if there is a too ambitious there, yeah. in my opinion,
yeah.
Because a lot of people would say that to me. I've heard it throughout my life. Yeah. You're too ambitious. Like, yeah. What does too that, ambitious yeah. mean? Like, I have ambition
yeah.
to be better, to make things better, to help better. More people, et cetera. But yeah. what is... too where ambitious.
Like, where's the cutoff at?
Right. So, yeah. I mean, and I will, I guess, confirm or attest that we as entrepreneurs are the hardest critic on ourselves.
Oh, yeah.
So sure. you saying, yeah, I'm too ambitious, you're kind of
harsh.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harsh.
Yeah. Yeah. So you jumping into, in the name of the bar.
It was the View.
The View. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. What the View Tequila Bar?
It was the View Tequila Bar.
There you go.
And then that was the first 2 years.
Yeah.
And then the last 3 years, I transitioned into more of a bar and grill.
Okay. Okay.
After some mistakes were made.
And what were those mistakes?
Well, I jumped into the bar business without a business plan.
Okay.
I was 23 years old.
Yeah. You know, what is a business plan?
What is a business plan? I remember. And I'm a biologist.
Yeah.
So I was, you know, like, I really didn't. That was my mistake that I made.
Okay.
But it was a very great learning experience mistake.
Sure.
Know, because without, when I jumped into something that I shouldn't have right away, you know, and that's me being too ambitious.
Okay,
that's my definition of being too ambitious, because I did something without thinking twice.
I gotcha. No, that makes sense.
And so that's where it kind of backfired on me.
Gotcha.
That's what I mean.
But I think without going through that, you aren't who you are now.
Exactly, you're right. Exactly. 100% right. So I don't regret it. Don't get me wrong. I don't regret it. When I look back, I'm like, damn, I'm glad I did it, because I wouldn't be who I am now if I hadn't just said, screw it.
Sure, sure.
I'm going in.
And then on this show, I want to make sure that we're also talking about the failures. We're talking about those milestones, yeah. Those, I call them landmines, that we step on throughout this journey.
Yeah.
Because I'm a firm believer that you don't get to skip over that stuff on this journey.
Oh,
I mean, what I talked about on a previous show was, don't take advice from somebody that tried or somebody that's never actually done it and completed it. Because they have a completely different view of what somebody that actually did do it.
Yeah.
Like yourself, you're able to talk about the trials and tribulations that you've had because you went through them. I want to talk about that because I want you to know that this wasn't easy, so to speak.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't easy. Like I said, the my first 2 years in the business, everything started out great, and it would have continued great, but I didn't have a business plan. I didn't know what I was doing. Things were just moving away. It's a fast lane.
Absolutely.
Especially the bar business.
Absolutely.
Fast lane.
And being that I had the perspective of, I don't know if I'm saying too much, but being able to see your business grow from the financial side of things, being behind the counter, taking the deposits, et cetera. Yeah, I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do.
I know that Mom and Dad weren't there to give you money for this stuff that you're doing. And I can say that to the folks out there, and perception is a reality out there. So people would look and see, oh, John Vale, yeah, he's opening up a club, or he's opening up this, he's doing that. He's got Mommy and Daddy money. Yeah. No, that's not how this happened, guys.
So to go on that topic, my dad actually, I didn't tell my parents I was opening up a bar until a week prior to the grand opening.
What? Did you do it via invitation?
No, they actually found out through a friend of mine. They go,
wow.
Hey, that's awesome. Your son's opening a bar. They ran into each other at the grocery store or something. And they're like, hey, that's awesome. Your son's opening a bar. And my dad right away freaking was like,
What are you talking about?
And so then he calls me.
Oh, wow.
And he's like, what the hell is this? You
know? Wow.
He got pissed.
He
got so pissed. He actually tried to call TBC to revoke. Tried to do whatever he could in his power to get my license, my liquor license revoked.
I believe that. I do believe
but
that.
You can't. Now when I look back at it, like, he was so, you got me.
It's perception.
He's a parent.
Yep.
I wouldn't want my 23-year-old kid opening a bar.
Totally get it. Liability, risk. There's so much that goes into that. Yeah,
he's just exposed to a bad environment. It's in general.
It reminds me of the movie Dazed and Confused when the kids show up at the door, knocking on the door. Here, we're here for the kegger. The parents open the door. You're like, nope, it's not happening.
I love that movie. See, if you had asked me some questions on that movie, I would have got them right.
It'd be cooler if I did.
Yeah. Would have been a lot cooler.
That's awesome. So you going through, and I want to put the perspective back in play. Sorry, we went off on a tangent
for a second.
You opened the bar. You then went through some trials and tribulations of determining all kinds of stuff, which I would imagine.
To the point where, like I said, it went great for the first 6 months or 8 months.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when it wasn't the customers or the business wasn't there.
Okay.
There's customers. We're slam packed.
Sure.
It was the internal operations that killed me.
The business side of things.
Mm-hmm. I could get people to the club.
Absolutely.
But now on the operational end, I didn't know what I was doing.
Okay.
So I totally screwed that up.
Gotcha.
Badly. To the point where, I almost, after the first 2 years, I was at the point where I was like, you know what? I'm losing my ass.
Yeah.
Like, I'm losing my ass.
Might
be time to throw in the towel. I was already down to like, man, I think this is it.
Yeah.
I'm going down.
So what changed that outcome?
I was like, you know what? I'm just I'm not one to quit, man.
Okay.
I'm not one to quit. So I was like, I know I could still make this work. I'm 25 years old now at the time. Mm-hmm. And I go, I'm still young. I still got time to make this work. It's not, you know what I mean? I got all my money invested.
Sure, sure.
I don't have no savings.
That's right.
So I got to make it work.
And that seems to be a reoccurring theme throughout these when I interview or speak to different entrepreneurs, yeah, is they go all in, mm-hmm, in their businesses, and there is no opportunity for, yeah, failure on a larger level,
yeah,
because it's all there. So that whole safety net concept, it's not there.
And that's where, you know, that's kind of where I start, you know, I was literally, I don't know, for like a week or 2 weeks where I was just so like out of it because I was thinking, this is going to be a big decision of my,
sure,
my life.
Yeah, absolutely.
It really is. So I was like, you know, the way I am, I was like, you know, I don't quit, man. So I put my chin up and just freaking said, this is it. I'm going to revamp it.
Okay.
I'm going to change. I'm going to turn it into, I'm going to start opening up for earlier in the day.
Okay.
I'm going to get the kitchen going.
Okay.
And I'm going to make a bar menu. And to get away from the whole little club lounge,
sure,
crap.
So, so in essence, you grew up.
I grew up,
yeah, right?
And, you know, those 2 years was probably one of the most valuable 2 years of my life because I learned how to finally run a business.
I gotcha. Yeah. And I think that is...
It came at a cost.
No, I believe you. And I've been in the same situations with, yeah, multiple businesses that we've opened and failed and continued or said, okay, we need to change this.
Yeah.
But the concept behind learning and going through those failures, I think a lot of folks believe that because I went to school for business, like not, yeah, me, which I, okay, did, but never graduated... But because I'm going to pick business or entrepreneurship in college or something like that, it doesn't teach you the real nitty gritty.
Yeah, it doesn't. So I would still, to this day, if you asked me, John, if you went back, you're a freshman, UTSA all over again, would you still pick biology or do you pick business? I'll pick biology.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because
It wouldn't have changed much.
Yeah. It really wouldn't. I think of business, you could learn a lot on paper.
Sure.
But for example, you asked me to choose to hire a guy from Harvard or a guy who's been 20 years in
the workforce. Trenches. Yeah.
I'm going to take the guy 20 years.
And
I'm going to take experience
I
over
will
paper.
Too. Any day.
And I'm going to take experience over this, you know, paper. That's the way, that's me.
And I'm right there with you. And a lot of people are the same way, but there's still this narrative of the other. But and that's okay. I don't knock college at all.
Yeah.
It definitely something if institutional that if you go down that path, just make sure that it is a fine-tuned degree that when, yeah, you get out, you have something there and you stick to,
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
What you find is that most that graduate don't even end up in the field that they graduated or that they specialized or studied.
They don't. That's a crazy part.
Yeah. So, I mean, in addition to what you can probably learn about as accounting, you can learn about marketing, but even still back to your point, I believe it has to do with the actual business owner, their persona, the way they go about things, the way that they don't give up, the tenacity, yeah, of that. Yeah. It's something that's it's a magnet.
It's the real life experience.
Yeah.
You know, in those 2 years, I felt like I graduated from a, how do I say it, from a doctorate.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It probably wearing on you. Health wasn't the greatest, not sleeping, worrying, all of that good stuff.
But, you know, I took what I learned, you know, those couple of years, and then I implemented with the last, you know, 3 years.
Okay.
And I say 3 years because I had a 5-year lease.
Okay.
And so those last 3 years, I finished up the lease and it was good. The last 3 years were great. Actually, it was awesome. I was like, man, I should have done this from the beginning.
Had I known,
I had done this from day one, yep, it would have been great. But regardless, I wouldn't have continued after the fifth year. Actually, already after the third year, man, the bar business is wear and tear. I was tired of going to bed at 6 a.m.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
And I was tired of being there all the time.
Yeah.
Bar business is one of those businesses where you have to
You have to watch. You got to watch. They're sticky fingers.
So, yeah. So
it's just, there's a lot of cash.
I've been through so many different employees and so many problems. So much. Just thinking about it, you know.
Ooh, gives you anxiety.
Never do a bar business again. I mean, don't get me wrong. Nothing wrong with them. But it's not the bar business in particular. It's definitely not for me. The late nights and all that stuff.
Yeah. No, totally get it. Now we say that we're older. But at the time, it was like, this is genius.
Yeah, at the time. Everybody
and
wants
it was.
To open a bar. Everybody wants to open a bar. They're like, bar is gonna be fun. Like that. I was that guy.
Yeah.
And after 1 year, this is like after 2 years, this is like, what the hell am I thinking? Like, I'm tired of waking up at noon. I'm tired of waking up. Who wants to wake up at?
You miss half the day.
Yeah. Who wants to wake up at that time?
Yeah, you're right.
I don't know. It's just not.
And know. As they say, the only thing that you find after midnight is nothing but bad stuff. Anyway,
yeah, right? Exactly. So it's just nothing good out there at that time.
So after the bar scene, after the view. What happened?
After the view, after being there 5 years, I left on a good note. After I put the fire lease, I was like, all right, you know what? I'm going to take a little chill pill, relax. And I was ready to, I put my hunt on for a franchise.
Okay.
You know, this is
any reason behind wanting to go franchise versus another industry? I mean, you had already kind of gotten into the food and beverage.
Kind of. The thing is, I didn't want to make the same mistake. So the bar, like if I was going to open another bar, I would have just opened another bar without doing a franchise, right? But I wanted to get like into the food, more food.
Okay.
Strictly food, a little bit of alcohol, franchise, like, you know, whether it's a burger franchise or what, any decent franchise.
Gotcha.
So that was going to, I was like, I'm not going to make the same mistake. I'm going to go in there with the franchise. Someone that has a system.
Right. Gotcha.
A system in play.
Because you've learned how to manage a system that you created. But if one is provided for you, or it's like, I'm acing this.
Yep. Exactly. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get something that has a working system, which is a franchise. Okay. Most of them, hopefully, right? You'll think. Not all of them, though. But so I was like, so I took a couple of years and so I could choose what.
Sure.
I just don't want to jump into a franchise. I didn't want to do, like, if I do the
right away.
Jump in right away. No, and I was like, sit back and scope it out and see which franchise will fit me best.
Okay.
And in the meantime, I was doing some recreational things also. Okay. And, you know, I dabble with the stock market and mutual funds and all that stuff. But at the same time, and I know you as well, we're doing the poker thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, ran doing that whole running some poker games.
Yeah. And the reason being is you had already made the cash, essentially, from the businesses that you opened. And you were your own boss. You're not punching a clock. You now can, technically, if you wanted to, take a break.
Take a break.
Reevaluate. Yeah. What do I want to do next?
That's what I did for a couple of years, you know. When I say a couple of years, not like a lot of years.
No, absolutely. Yeah.
It's just literally like a couple of years. And then about two to three around there. But at the same time, I was still doing other
shaking and moving.
I was still shaking
entrepreneur.
And moving. Yeah, I was still shaking and moving.
Yeah,
with my funds, you know, just because you can't have them just sitting there. Right?
Absolutely, and that's one thing that entrepreneurs cannot stand is money just sitting.
No, exactly.
If it's not growing or it's not working for you, then what's it doing there?
What's it doing there? Exactly. So, finally, I chose the franchise that would fit me best. It was BurgerFi.
Okay. I remember that.
Yeah. So I love the whole all-natural burgers, you know, hormones and antibiotics. Nothing wrong with that, you know.
Not at all.
And they have beer and wine.
Yeah. Yeah. So you had a little bit of both worlds. Yeah.
Nothing crazy, but, you know, a little bit of both worlds. And so my last business, I had a very rough time with the landlord.
Okay.
My bar, there could be a leak in the ceiling and, hey, man. Yeah, I'm paying you, $4,000 a month.
Right.
I'm expecting get this leak fixed.
Sure.
And he was the kind of landlord that would, no. It's probably your clients dancing on the roof. Stuff like that. You know, like stupid stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I was just like, nah, it's like, it was just
being at the mercy of someone else.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I was just tired of that. So I made sure on my next business, which is going to be the franchise, my plan was to purchase some property and then and then take a loan against the property to help with build the business on the property. So that's what I was managed to do.
Okay.
And
being said, you own the building. Even though you had a franchise, you own the building that the franchise was paying rent to.
Exactly.
Boom. Boom. Okay.
Yeah. So own the property, but I built the building to put the business on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the franchise, they're not in charge of paying the rent because I'm still paying the rent.
It's still your P&L. Yeah, it's your P&L.
Yeah.
But runs the P&L itself from BurgerFi
to
John Vale LLC as the holding company.
So that's what I did. Have you ever seen the movie The Founder?
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, kind of something like that. Mm-hmm. I kind of protected myself.
Correct.
Something did happen with the franchise. I still have more control than they do.
Well, I want to take a brief moment because we have not touched on this in any other show, is the difference and why entrepreneurs open up corporations or LLCs. And it is for protection. If you as the owner and you start off most businesses as a sole proprietor or simple partnership, and it is a filed on a Schedule C on your basic personal tax returns. And then from there, as you expand or as you diversify your businesses, you then want to protect yourself because let's say John were to have opened the first business under his own personal Schedule C, which he could have done and been crazy of him, but he could have. And something happens to where a patron is trying to sue The View. That would essentially put John's personal assets, personal everything at risk, whereas if it is all under an LLC, the LLC is a separate entity. So I just wanted to touch on that for everybody to understand and why people open up LLCs.
Yeah,
exactly. Smartest thing you can do is day one, open the LLC. Go reserve the name with the comptroller, go to LegalZoom, get with your CPA, do what you need to do, but get the LLC. Don't do it under your personal, guys.
No, definitely not. So that's how you protect yourself really well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So a good example is, like we said, it's to say it's JV LLC. Mm-hmm. It's the business.
Right.
And then JEV LLC is the property.
That makes sense.
So JV LLC pays JEV LLC rent.
Gotcha. No, and it makes perfect sense. I do the same thing personally. I mean, we have a holdings account, and we actually buy our investment properties under the holding account that we're flipping so that there's no liability on us. So essentially everything goes through that business, and then we're able to either cut ourselves a paycheck if we want to, a bonus if we want to, or just wait till the end of the year until we get our distribution.
Exactly.
But that's how business works essentially, guys, in a small span. I should probably do a show just on business and etiquette and all that. So you at BurgerFi, you were there you owned the franchise for quite some time.
4 years.
There you go. And then what happened from there?
So I joined BurgerFi, and it was the same situation because when I got into the franchise of BurgerFi, they send you to Florida for a month for training, a rigorous training, and it's not just for obviously flipping burgers. It's for just general business.
Gotcha.
And so that way, I took there's an owner's course
for
3 or 4 days.
Right.
And there's the GM course. Well, I took the GM course because I took my GMs with me or my managers with me, but I'm that kind of guy. It's just like, I'm not going to it's called security, right?
Sure.
And then also other things as well, but if something happens to your management, you got to step in.
I agree.
How am I going to depend on X amount of these managers, something goes wrong, and I don't know what's gonna, what's gonna happen to the business.
I agree.
So I took the GM course for the month so I could actually know the ins and outs of the business. And I really, really strongly recommend that for any business owner. You gotta know your business inside out. You have to. If you don't, then you're gonna open up yourself to a can of worms, right?
Absolutely. And the perception there that I've heard is, since he's the business owner, he doesn't know how to do that or blah. I mean, that drives me insane when I hear it, because at the end of the day, that business owner, let's say if he's owned the business for quite some time, he may not know how to do the things now because he's hired people to do that. But originally, it was just that person, doing everything, exactly. Opening a business. Be prepared to be your accountant. Be prepared to be your HR. Be prepared to be your therapist. Everything, you know?
Everything.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's so that's what I did just so I could have that bill, sense of security. And also on top of that, it's just I don't know, this the way I see things sometimes, it's hard for me to tell someone to do something and I don't know nothing about or I've never done.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm trying to say?
I do. Yep.
So I'm real big on that. So I was like, hey, you know what? I've done that. I did Fry Station for a week. You know, sure. I did Flip Burgers for a week. I also did, you know, I did all that training. I, you know, made this and that. So that way when I'm in the business, even though I'm the owner, I can still be like, you know, I know what I'm talking about. And when I'm telling someone, oh, that doesn't look good. Or you know what? You didn't, how do I say it? You didn't fry those long enough. Or that batter looks bad.
Absolutely.
Because you should know already.
And most would go, oh, you don't know what you're talking about. When it's like, move over. Yes, I do. And now you're fired.
No, you're fired.
No, John is not like that, nor am I. But that'd be cool one day. I'm cool kidding.
Not my character.
No, cool. Mine either. It would. I'm just kidding. Come back. I'm just kidding. Same thing. I said the same. BurgerFi, going through the training, you had the business for 4 years. What happened from there?
That's a big question, right? They're like, well, what's going on? Like, well, how's everything going? So, yeah, BurgerFi was going great.
Okay.
It was going good. I even, in my building that I have there, I even opened up a kids play another separate business, a Playland Center. So it complemented burgers, playground. So it was called Kids Inc.
Okay, I remember. That's very cool. Yep.
Yeah, so it'll be a bunch of birthday parties there. And I did it to complement BurgerFi.
Okay.
So anyways, after a while, you know, after 4 years and a franchise, you're paying royalties.
Mm-hmm.
And these royalties, they add up. I mean, it's like a mafia system.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And I don't mean to say that in a bad way because I have nothing against franchises and nothing against BurgerFi.
But if you had to compare it, it's like a mafia.
Like a mafia system. Yeah, they come in because you own everything.
Absolutely.
But they come in there and tell you,
This
is how you run it.
And then pay me.
And then pay me. So it's like a mafia system.
No, that's actually a really, really good analogy.
So it's like, all right, you want protection? All right.
Awesome.
Protection from what? giving them X amount of money weekly, because, you know, I got a good percentage.
Sure.
It got old, right?
Gotcha.
It got old. And I was like, you know what? I signed up for this. I can't be upset.
Right.
You know, this is another lesson learned in business. I did a lot of lessons learned throughout the way, man.
Absolutely.
And it's just like, I didn't think it was going to be that bad, but it wasn't bad. Don't get me wrong. It was good. But it's just after a while, I'm like, man, after 10 years, I could have saved $1 million if I wasn't with them.
Right.
Literally, that's, they really would have came out to.
Right.
Know? So, us business people, we calculate all our pennies because we want to do something else with that or whatever.
Absolutely.
So I'm just thinking like, that's $1 million I just threw away in 10 years.
And you're cognizant of that by way of trials and tribulation.
Yeah,
it's like, wait a minute, that extra, you think it's a small amount, but then it adds up.
It adds
like
up.
You said, it's a good concept for most to to try and understand that, you can foresee the future on things like that or try and predict it, but you can't predict the moments that are unpredictable.
Unpredictable.
So
but it's like, I knew what I was signing up for.
Right.
I knew they're going to be taking, well, obviously it's all in the paperwork, but I didn't see it as that bad.
Right.
Beginning.
At the time.
At the time, because you know what? You look at it as they're helping me.
Correct.
I'm using their brand, their name.
Yep.
So, but after a while, when you mastered the system.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you know what? They're not doing anything no more.
What are you doing for me now other than holding your hand out?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So like 4 years later, you're just holding your hand out now, literally.
Yeah.
So that's when it got kind of annoying. So that, and me being me, right. I was like, all right, this is my two ambitions coming right. to play again.
Time, here we go.
Here we go. So I lit up another punch and I was like, you know what? I'm done. I'm tired of being, you know, in this
at the mercy of.
Yeah, the mercy of you guys and this mafia system. I make it sound so bad. It ain't that bad, but I just say mafia system. And I kiss my ring.
That's right. Kiss my ring.
but anyways, so yeah, I was just like, guys, and it's a 10-year contract.
Yeah, wow.
I'm in my fourth year.
Okay.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to have to file a lawyer up and hopefully I could get out of this contract somehow because they have the right to take over your business.
Sure.
Literally.
Completely.
They mm-hmm. could come in. It's like that movie, The Founder.
Yeah.
They could come in there and they have full control.
Now, and you signed it.
And I signed my life away. So, but the smart thing I did, which I was already, this is the only reason why.
And I was going to ask about this, but I think I know. Go ahead.
The smart thing I did, and I already prepared for this, it's for worst bad scenario, case scenarios, the property owned. So they would essentially become, I would be their landlord and I could put the price on
whatever you want.
I want on rent.
That's right.
So they got that right away.
Absolutely.
So that I
that's very that. Smart. So two things I want to mention here. Number one, as soon as you can gain control of your own destiny like that, do so. Take the risk as long as, I mean, especially on property, especially on commercial property, especially on land, those things don't really lose value. Even in a down market, you still have to have businesses. You still have to have these things. You can find tenants.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, the land, the building becomes paid off.
Yep.
Right? So essentially that becomes a residual and also another tax shelter.
Exactly.
But in this case, you were able, they thought they held the cards, but they really didn't.
They really didn't, yeah. And then they realized that pretty quickly to the point where I didn't even really have to get any lawyers involved.
It was a peaceful.
I mean, my lawyer did get involved, but it was a.
Just to let you know, I'm here.
He talked, you know, they're both lawyers talked, uh-huh. and we kind of put our side, they put their side. And after that, it was like, there's no need more for lawyers because they kind of just. You know what, John? You were good.
That's right.
Franchisee.
Best of luck on the future endeavors. That's awesome.
Hey, just try to not do anything with burgers, okay? I was like, you got it, man. I'm tired of burgers already.
That's awesome. And then the second thing that I wanted to mention about that situation is, yes, you own the land, you own the building, but you also maximized what you could out of the space by opening another income or revenue generating business.
So the building is originally built for BurgerFi,
okay,
but it sits on an acre, so that was just too big for one business. So me and the architect made it to where there was a two bay building mm-hmm. with a joint patio in the middle.
Sure,
obviously you seen my
building
there, and so it maximized the space. Of course, the Kids Inc. thing mm-hmm. was I could have easily rented it out to whoever.
Sure.
But me being me, I was like, nah, I'll just do another business there, which I did. And maximizing the space. But like you said, I could still do a residual income and lease it out.
Absolutely. So that concept that he's talking about in the food or business industry can be the same with any industry if you need a brick and mortar. So the way that you set that up is you renovate, what have you, the spaces, the actual commercial building or building mm-hmm. space. And if you need the whole space for your business, great. But if you don't, even better, because now you can parcel it out and lease those spaces out and essentially pay yourself back or pay it off through way of somebody else's funds. The same concept of investment properties. It's the same thing with business, guys. And that's if the sooner, the better.
Sooner, the better. That is exactly right. Well put. That's when I had the idea for Alamo Biscuit Company.
Let's get into that now. We've gotten, I think, our folks know exactly who you are. Well, not exactly, because nobody will ever know, right?
All right.
But we've got a good understanding that you are absolutely somebody that is a grinder. You are an advocate for the mindset of I'm not going to quit even though I fail. Mm-mm. Because in life and business, you're going to go through failures.
Right? Yeah, obviously, I did.
So the next step for you, you've gone, done your own thing, bar scene, graduated from that to doing more food and beverage, then did the franchise thing, and now it's time to do your own thing.
Yeah, my own concept. I was like, you know what? Time for the big show, the big boy show, right? That's right. Graduated from the food and whatever restaurant thing now. And I was like, so going to Alamo Biscuit Company, that one was a risk, like as far as a huge risk. I mean, restaurants are the number one businesses that
for turnover. That's right.
Turnover and failure. Mm-hmm. Right? I think only like 15% of restaurants make it.
That's right.
If that, I don't even know. Mm-hmm. Somewhere around there. Some crazy statistic. Of course, statistics don't even, I don't
think, I agree.
I don't even look at them.
Like, that sounds good. Whatever. Yeah. Go ask different people, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. I don't look at statistic numbers. So I don't even know that number is right. But anyway, I just know that it's a high failure. And, I was like, man, what can I do here? And mind you, this is before I already I already had a plan going into, with BurgerFi. Before I got out,
right,
I already had this plan going.
Okay.
My own concept already.
Okay, that makes sense.
Toward the end. Obviously, you have to have your ducks lined in a row, right? So I was like, man, what can I do in San Antonio that's maybe something outside the box?
Sure.
And I'm not going to say biscuits are outside the box, but...
But kind of, the way that you do it.
So that's... it's just, when you think San Antonio, you think of tacos and this Mexican food and stuff like that. And of course, there's all other kinds of restaurants, but there wasn't no like biscuit restaurant
right
at all. And so I was like, and I've told a lot of people, like I started telling my friends, like, hey man, what do you think about this?
The concept.
Yeah. You think it's gonna work? Dude, everybody, including my family, when I told them, my poor dad, he's probably like, I remember telling my father, he's like,
they're probably ching out.
He's like, you don't learn, do you?
That's awesome.
So, so I told my friends, family, and everyone just was like, no. Like, biscuits?
What the fuck? Yeah, what are you thinking?
What are you doing? Like, why? And I was like, and I didn't give a crap what the hell anybody said. I was like, you know what?
And that's awesome right there. I think that is something that people struggle with, is caring what others think and to what extent and how it affects you and your decision making.
Yeah.
Most, I can't say all because I don't know. Most entrepreneurs, we don't really care what you think. We're going to do it because it's in our mind. We know our work ethic. Yeah. We know what we're capable of. Yeah. And we know what we can push ourselves to.
That's the way we are.
And we've already been through failure. Yeah. So bring it on.
Bring it on. Especially after the bar, I was like, bring on anything.
Anything.
Anything, please. I've seen it all. I've seen gunshots in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Bring on anything, man.
I believe it.
But it's like, you could tell me that the 1% success rate, I'd be like, do it. I don't care.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's a chance.
That's awesome.
Yeah, man. But so I was like, literally everybody like pretty much said, not. I think only one person, my friend David Padilla, was like, yeah, of course, that's a good idea.
So what gave you the push? What gave you the confidence? Obviously, we know your history, but on this concept, what was it?
I'm going back to BurgerFi school and all that stuff. I was in the restaurant in the franchise for almost 4 years. So that gave me the confidence to where I was like, I knew what I was doing.
Yeah.
They trained me well. Don't get me wrong. The BurgerFi program and their system, oh my God, immaculate.
Yeah.
I mean, it was flawless.
That makes sense.
So, and I learned a lot. I mean, it's a bunch of studying and testing.
Sure.
Literally taking tests. It's like a rigorous program. And after that, I was like, man, shit. I'm ready. That's what gave me the confidence to do my own thing. So it's like, thank you, BurgerFi franchise. Right?
Absolutely. So the toll in paying them paid off
In another way. Well, and it still paid off. Don't get me wrong. I still had great business.
Of course. I was still profitable.
I was still great business. Don't get me wrong. But at the same time, it was like I lucked out twice because I learned a lot. Made money, And then moved on to something else and was able to get out of the franchise.
Yeah.
Without no cost.
Yeah. And I think the fact that you are the concept of learning from those experiences, I believe that us entrepreneurs are constantly yearning for knowledge.
Yes. Yes. That's one of my big things is, you know, investing in yourself.
Sure.
Constantly learning, man. That's how you invest in yourself, is constantly reading, constantly learning. I go to bed reading every day, man. I literally reading, because I love to learn more and more and more about everything and nothing.
And I believe that's super important for people to, number one, those that know you, but probably don't know that about you, yeah. And the people that are going to see this, did you know that? But other listeners, they think once you've created the actual vision of your dream, your business, that you put it on autopilot.
That's not the case at all. And not the case at all. Autopilot doesn't exist really in our mindset.
I agree with that.
We're constantly, it's 24/7.
Yeah.
24/7 working, literally. So it's, sometimes it gets, it gets kind of, how do I say it? Sometimes I'll ask myself, like, golly, John, do you really want to be on the phone 24/7 taking calls and seeing all these messages, what's going on at this business and this business and this business? Like, but at the end of the day, I like it.
Me too, man.
On Easter Sunday, I went down to see my family, and my mom was like, they call me John Eric. That's okay. My middle name.
Yeah.
She's like, John Eric, put the phone down. It's Sunday. What the hell is going on Sunday? I was like, Mom, I got a lot going on. I got this over here. The restaurant slammed over here. They messaged me over here. And it's just like, there's a lot going on still.
And a lot of times people will ask me, how do you do it with everything that you got going on? And I'm like, I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, for some odd reason, and I'm super ADD, ADHD, whatever you want to call it, but if something's not going on, I'm going to create something to start going on.
Exactly. I mean, we'll get into that in a minute of my other businesses, but golly, man, it's just like, what are you doing? Like, you already have a lot going on.
Yeah.
And once it starts turning into like an autopilot, you're like, no, that's not good. We need something going on.
That's exactly right. Sitting still is so weird.
Yeah, we don't let autopilot happen.
It's very true.
we turn off autopilot.
So on your Alamo Biscuit & Co.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Tell our listeners, because those that are listening, some of them are in San Antonio and local. Tell them about your concept.
So it's a unique concept. I like to say it's a unique concept because, you know, there's not really anyone doing what we're doing at the restaurant. It's, you know, you're getting a biscuit, obviously, mm-hmm. but you're not just putting gravy on it. You know what I mean? Or just normal sausage gravy or regular gravy. You're putting stuff like a pork belly on there. You're putting brisket on there. And I could go on.
You're making me
this.
Hungry.
Yeah. We do a Huevos Rancheros biscuit.
Oh my gosh.
Literally, Huevos Rancheros biscuits. I could go on and on and on.
Sure.
Just to give you an idea. So we have that twist of, it's American but Mexican biscuits.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like when you think biscuit, you think very American, right?
Sure.
Your traditional biscuit and eggs and gravy, or mm-hmm. briskets and gravy, whatever. Bacon, egg, biscuit. But we turned that little Mexican twist on there as well.
I like that.
And that's, you know, like I said, the Huevos Rancheros and stuff like that. The Texican.
Yeah.
You know, we put some poblano gravy on there and some smoked sausage.
You're killing me.
Oh, my gosh.
So from that business concept, because it is your own, have you considered in the future franchising it yourself?
It's funny that you asked that, because right prior to COVID, mm-hmm. I was there were actually people reaching out from Dallas and Houston
mm-hmm.
That wanted to license or use the name of the brand.
Sure,
Just, you know, like a franchise.
Pay a franchise fee and
yeah,
something do like your that. Thing, but you're paying me. But at the same time, you've got to go by my guidelines.
Yeah, exactly. And so that was right before COVID started. And obviously the last year, I think for everyone, has been on a pause.
Right.
And right now, thank God things are getting back to normal again.
Sure. And I want to get into that after
this. Yeah, of course. Yeah, for sure. And then, so there are, that is actually one, if you ask A. John Bell, like, what's next?
Yeah.
You know, for that particular business with Alamo Biscuit, that would be next.
So again, no intentions of stopping there.
No.
I love it. And the cool part is you did yourself go through a franchisee program already, not only the how to get into the franchise, because there's a lot of franchises that are like, if you don't have $1 million in the bank, you can't sign up, period.
Exactly.
But you also were able to go through that management training program, see how they set it up. You are able to either you get somebody to write it for you with your input, or you write it yourself, but you write the playbook on
that. You write the playbook on that. And now that I know how – it's cool because I know how it feels to be on the other side.
Sure.
The franchisee side. Mm-hmm. And now I could use that to my benefit because now I could be the franchisor.
Yeah.
And actually help these franchisees or alleviate some of the problems I was having. Right.
Right. So that's very cool.
So I don't know. I guess it's out there.
Before we go into any other businesses you have, because I know you have multiple just like myself, and it is tough to juggle and all that good stuff, but we do it to ourselves because we love what we do. How did COVID affect you guys? You had mentioned it affected, and I want the truth. Like, tell me what happened. Yeah, what happened?
Oh man, it you know what?
So first off, you're sitting here today. Did you make it through?
I made it there. Never closed. Amen. Never closed any of my businesses.
I love it.
We made it through here. It affected financially a lot. Don't get me wrong. The last year was, that was bad. It was really bad. But I hung in there. I kept as many employees as I could.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And I never closed the doors. So I, you know, hey.
And in those times, you as the business owner have to make very tough decisions.
Man, dude, that's bad. A lot of tough decisions. Mm-hmm. A lot of things that we weren't ever expecting. You know?
Sure.
They really put us to the test. But you know what? I look at it as a good thing, because now after COVID, shit, bring it on.
Yeah, no, even on, again, dude. Yeah.
Again, like, bring it on.
And I've had others on the show that are in different industries, but I haven't had a restaurateur to be able to truly have a conversation about how COVID affected you guys. Did you guys learn from it? Because it's not the same as other industries in the sense, for example, myself, mortgage industry, insurance, real estate, online businesses. We didn't close the doors either. In fact, we absolutely did a great, I mean, we flourished in that market.
Yeah,
I was gonna say. And the reason being is we were able to say, hey, employees, just take your computer home and you're now working remotely.
Yeah.
Everything was online. But as a restaurateur with brick and mortar.
Well, there is online, but you've got to.
Yeah. Take a virtual bite.
I can't tell my cook to work from home. That's for sure.
Could you imagine what that would be like? So what was that like for you guys? And how did you make it through?
Okay. It was honest. I mean, I literally had to step in. I was cashier or server, host. Sure. I was doing everything at one point because, remember, we're all to go only.
Correct.
So I was taking phone calls and I stepped in. You know, I was
whatever
I
it takes.
I was running in front of the house for a while. You know, no choice.
Again, a common trait is a whatever it takes mentality.
Whatever it takes.
You've got to get it done because failure. It's not an option. It's a milestone.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Exactly. So it's, right. Well put. Yeah. So I just, I was literally that guy taking phone calls and putting in the orders and running food out to cars. I mean,
that's awesome.
Do whatever it takes.
Absolutely.
Man.
And onlookers are going, wow, he's going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah,
that's somebody I would follow, you know? So getting, and thank you for sharing that. So now, you know, it did affect us here in San Antonio from that standpoint. But at the same time, there are absolutely business owners, restaurateurs that were able to grab the bull by the horns, grab the reins and do what they needed to do in order to survive the COVID and unknown market, you know, now that we're back to, I wouldn't say normal, but
not normal, yeah,
it's but picking up. We're in up. Texas, baby.
Yeah. I'm right.
But, what So from there, what other businesses? I know you have other businesses. So just briefly tell us about some of the other.
Briefly. Okay. So, well, now that we're talking about COVID, during COVID, I opened up, started a company called Sanitizer to You.
Okay.
You know, because obviously not only myself, but everyone in San Antonio and nationwide were having a problem getting their hands on sanitizer. Mm-hmm. And obviously sanitizer is something we needed at the time, right? To help prevent the security measure against COVID, right?
Absolutely.
So I had access to a factory in Mexico.
Okay.
Where, you know, I could obtain some sanitizer, but at a huge volume.
Right.
Big volume. I'm talking about, you know, hundreds of thousands of bottles.
Wow.
So I was like, you know what? I was like, I'm me being me.
Yep.
I was like, you know what?
Too ambitious.
Too ambitious. Here we go. Right. I think it was in March of last year. Over a year ago.
Wow.
I started Sanitizer to You Company, and I literally ordered a crap load of sanitizer, got a warehouse here in San Antonio, got a warehouse in Dallas, got a warehouse in Houston, and got a warehouse in Austin.
Wow.
And I ordered all the sanitizer from Mexico, shipped it to all four warehouses, and from there I organized a delivery system.
That's awesome. Okay. That's what I was going to get into, because you took the big risk on actually – you had to buy the product.
Yeah, buy the product.
Then you had to ship the product. Then you had to figure out where to store the product. And then it's all about distribution and sales at that point.
Yeah.
And keeping that train moving.
So I did all this. I created a freaking company with all this plan in like 2 weeks.
Wow. That's impressive.
2 weeks, man.
That's impressive.
And I was just sitting there on the couch. And I was just there and I was like, you know what?
Ding!
I got the LLC done like in 2 days.
That's awesome.
And just started moving quick.
Yeah.
It was a delivery, a free delivery.
Okay.
So you would get onto sanitizer2you.com, and then you would order how many bottles you want.
That's genius.
And then a free delivery.
That's so smart.
I covered all of Texas, the major cities in Texas with sanitizer.
Well, I think because of your experiences and failures, you were able to realize, okay, here's the concept. This is the product. You already knew I need distributors. What's my price? What's my margin? How do I get it to people? How do I sell it? That would not have been done that quickly from somebody that did not have the failures and everything else that you had gone through.
It definitely took business experience.
Sure.
As far as to make that happen. Obviously, it took resources that I already had, right? Because I've been opening different businesses. I had those resources to make things move quick. So that's the only reason why I did it, because I knew I could make it happen fast.
Absolutely.
And, man, it did happen fast.
And it blew up.
Yeah, it blew up.
That's awesome.
And then that company actually took a turn for the better when I introduced the oh man, sorry, dude.
Bring it on.
Introduced the human disinfecting portal that you walk through.
No way.
US. Yeah, man.
That's awesome.
So that thing, I didn't think it was going to blow up that bad. I knew I'd pick up some traction, but I didn't do it worldwide, man.
No way.
All the way to Europe. I had articles in Europe of my portal, dude.
That's awesome.
Yeah, dude, it was crazy.
I didn't know that. I mean, I get on social media to kind of scroll and just like peck at the thing, but I did not know that.
Dude, I was
congratulations.
Freaking InfoWars was reaching out, and CNN picked up I was on a national cable.
That's awesome.
All over the dude, I had people calling me that like, don't even live in Texas.
Sure.
They saw me on the news. They're like, what the fuck?
That's awesome.
I mean, it just went wildfire. But anyways, it was just it was a little marketing technique involved, obviously. You know, I saw the portal. And
I want people to know, it is not easy. Everything that he's talking about here, it's painting the picture that it was kind of easy. It's not. There are a lot of steps that had to be taken within that two-week period moving forward.
That was 2 weeks of freaking...
Go. Hopefully. Yeah.
But, man, the disinfecting portal was just another... obviously it wasn't sanitizer, but it sprayed a hypochlorous acid.
Okay.
And which is really safe.
Sure. You
know? So that's another thing that created a big controversy because they thought I was spraying people and
with pest control.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly, man. They had no idea what they're talking about. So I had about 80% good press, 20% bad.
But there's no such thing as bad press.
There's no such thing as bad press. I even got some hate email, like yeah, dude, from random people. I don't know. But
wow.
That's crazy. It was like it blew up there for a while, but it was crazy. But so the human disinfectant portal, I put it at my restaurant. So what better place to try it than your own business?
I agree 100%.
So I put it there. Freaking, I had one of my employees, like, we did a walkthrough, like a demonstration, and we put it on our Instagram or whatever. And that thing just took off. Like,
wow.
I didn't expect it to go like that. And next thing you know, I'm freaking getting interviews with every damn news station. And then freaking even the New York Times had flew down and Yahoo Business came. Dude, it was crazy.
And, I think I want to point out that the day and age that we are in with technology being so rapid and social media having such a wide reach, man. You can come up with a business concept and blow up really quickly.
Next day.
But it's crazy. You still got to put in that work, guys.
Yeah,
you
still
got to put in the work.
So, yeah, man, so this is a crazy ride. But so I still have, and my company's still going right now, the sanitizer company. Yeah. I've actually working on some big deals with some large companies.
Gotcha.
For private labeling and stuff
very
like that.
Very cool.
So that's still going. Still got stuff going there. We're still selling sanitizer portals to schools.
Okay.
Yeah. That's why that's crazy. Yeah. Even had the Border Patrol reach out.
Wow. Wow. Can you tell them to give me back? I'm just kidding.
Can you tell them to give me back?
Man. So that's awesome. And I'm learning things that I did not know about you. And I've known you for quite some time and very respect you so much. And I want to, let's see here. You've got also an insurance company,
which we
have an insurance company as well. So that, again, not easy. But what I'm hearing is you are leveraging, parlaying, and double risking your money and investing in yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, that is pretty much what I'm hearing this whole last hour is I will bet on myself any day of the week.
Yeah. And it's really good when people also offer me to invest in me.
Sure.
I have a lot, you know.
No, absolutely.
And they're like, John, you know, hey, what do you, literally throwing hundreds of thousands of dollars at me. Like, hey, what do you got going next? And I'm, you know, it's a good feeling because that means they believe in you.
Absolutely. They believe in what your abilities are. And your abilities aren't flipping burgers. They're not doing, you are an entrepreneur. When you see opportunities, you can, well, I'll put it this way. You see opportunities when most don't.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
A lot of people see the opportunity, but they don't act on it.
They can't act on it.
Yeah.
Or are too scared. There you go. That's it. They are too scared to do that.
I think it's more of that. I think it's a lot of times it's more scared.
Yeah. And as I mentioned,
it's a gamble, man.
It is. Risk and reward.
I love playing poker. I love gambling. So.
And then as I mentioned before, failure, and I think I might even quote this or trademark it or something. Failure is not an option. It is a milestone.
Milestone.
I mean, it's just one of those things that if you're planning on being a wealthy entrepreneur or a successful entrepreneur, or a successful business owner. It doesn't even have to be wealthy, but to your lifestyle, so to speak, you're going to have to go through that failure. You're going to have to go through those speed bumps and sometimes they're going to hurt.
Yep.
But the question is, are you going to keep going?
Keep going. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good quote there.
I mean, put it on a t-shirt, John Vail. I'm like, this fucker.
Son of a bitch. Okay, I invite him on my show and he does this shit to me.
So I do know, and we're running out of time, so I want to wrap up pretty quickly, but you've got the insurance business. You've got CBD. You still doing CBD?
Yeah, CBD. Yeah, we have our CBD stores. So
you holler at me when you guys flip over to the other stuff and I'll invest.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure, man. that's the whole point of the CBD, our CBD coffee concept.
Yeah.
Man, it's last month was the best month ever, man.
That's awesome.
Crazy. You know, people go in there, they it's great coffee. We have good damn coffee. And then the coffee is the bait.
Yeah.
And then they see all the CBD stuff we have.
Absolutely.
And we manufacture it here in town. You can't beat it. It's local. Our lab is here, man. And so people love it.
And I think that business kind of grew because curiosity always gets the best of us.
Yeah.
And people tend to try it. And then they go, okay.
Cool. And they become more susceptible to it. And then especially when the marijuana becomes legal.
Correct.
We already have our foot in the door.
Absolutely.
And then it's
that. You've got your distributor set up already. Yeah. You've got your warehouses set up already.
You have to think about longevity, man.
I agree.
Longevity is just what it's about. So, right now it's going good, but imagine 5-10 years from now.
Why? Because you're not going to stop.
Nope.
I ain't gonna stop either. I promise you that.
I know you're not, bro. You don't gotta tell me that.
That's awesome. Sure. So, anything that you want to add to our listeners that they should know about you, about business, about any of those things that could potentially help them along the way in life, in business, in their current environment, what have you? Because, for example, with you, you're somebody that's not going to stop. I see in 5 years, you being exactly where you saw yourself being in 5 years because you're not going to allow yourself not to.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Exactly.
And I think onlookers see you, they see me, they see us living these lifestyles, going to Spurs games, going to things like that, that most don't get to go to. And they think that that's our life.
Yeah.
When they don't see any of the behind the scenes, what it took there.
Yeah, it's, man, as like I said, we don't really have I'm not going to say I don't have a social life. We do have social lives, but
to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's literally, I've been talking to you. Look at my phone, man.
Yeah.
We got how many messages and missed calls.
I'm right there with you.
Yeah. I know you're right there with me, but that's part of our life. It's just like, things, we're not available. Guess what? Things ain't going to run right.
Very true. That's very true.
So we have to be available 24/7.
Correct. And as you go on in business, you are not having to do everything, but you've empowered certain people and it's created less phone calls, emails until you go to the next opportunity where in that business, you've got to create the same concept.
Yeah.
And each business, the goal is to know it, grow it, and then delegate, empower, and do those things. Yeah. Automate things when you can. But go ahead.
A good book that I really strongly recommend for the listeners is Setting the Table by Danny Meyer, man.
Setting the Table by Danny Meyer.
That book right there. Oh, I could read that book like 4 times a year.
That's awesome.
It's an amazing book. Just a quick rundown on that is I'm really big on employees. The employees are my number one. And then it's my customers. That's where I am. If you ask any of my employees, they're all going to – I don't think one of them will say anything bad about me because Not to my face, but when I turn around.
But that's a good feeling.
But you know what I mean? It's just I put my employees first, and then it's the customers because the employees are your backbone, man. They're the ones that make you or break you. I tell them, guys, I can have the best biscuit in the world, but if you are not doing your job,
correct.
Guess what? That biscuit just went to shit.
Yeah. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Can it? Yes. But no, that's not what we're here to do. I love that. Yeah, I love the fact that you are at the point that you can focus on the people and better their lives and give them opportunities to do things that they never thought they would.
Exactly.
And that's another driver. And in my opinion, it's a bigger driver than the money factor once you have the means of making the money because you can always make that.
Yeah, exactly. So it's just, I've been real big on that. Just taking care of employees and it's helped me a lot.
That's awesome.
Putting the employees first and that'll actually get you a little further than you can imagine.
That's awesome. Well, John, I've learned a lot of things about you that I did not know, and I thought I knew quite a bit. But how would people get a hold of you? If you want to plug all your businesses right now, now's the time. Let them know what you got.
Oh, man. I guess, I'm not big on social media. Obviously, I post something very rare, but Facebook is the best way to get a hold of me, man. Just okay. John Vail.
And you've got Alamo Biscuiting Company, and that is where?
On a medical center on Huebner Street.
Very good. You've got, what's the name of the CBD?
It's called Rotke's.
Rotke's.
CBD.
There you go. Legal here in Texas. Okay. and then the insurance company. Insurance,
the Texas Associates Insurance.
Very good. It pretty much runs itself with the people you got.
Yeah, the office is there by, it's near South Park Mall, that area.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then you've got hand sanitizer to you.
Sanitizer to you company, yeah.
.com.
.com.
Oh, shit. Well, John, it's been great. Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate the dialogue that we've had today.
Thank you, man. It's just natural talking, and it's, you know, that's a, we're friends. So thank you for having me on here, man. It's
absolutely
so good.
So, guys, thank you for tuning in. If you like the content, please like, share, subscribe, and share it with somebody that you think will get some value, get some benefit out of this. Maybe they're starting a business. Maybe they're thinking about starting a business. Maybe they are just scared and tired of what they're doing currently, and their goal should be to start a business. You never know. I'm hoping that these conversations with other millennials that have been there, been through the trenches, can help you guys in the future. But until then, see you on the next one.